heard someone was telling me that someone who worked at Public Works here had left to become the director of Public Works in Long Beach. And I naturally assumed Long Beach, California. I'm like, wow, that's a big promotion. And then the person had come back. And then finally, the other person I was talking to is like, no, Long Beach, Washington.
Destination.
Not as sunny there. Beautiful place. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Probably a huge department, all like six or seven people.
All right, sir, we're ready for you.
Roll call, Jim Couch.
Don Jay.
Yes, Ben Wyhe.
Kevin Tyler.
Amy Arnold.
Don Meeks.
Rocky's here.
David Stein.
Danielle Cowley.
In addition, staff-wise, we have Sherry Villafane, who is our finance manager. We will tag her later on new business items. She'll be my, I'll make sure that I'm saying the right things on our financial stuff. And we have a guest who's Chris. And I'm, is that our?
It's an office person from the public.
No, I thought maybe that was someone for our, for Parks Foundation. Wasn't it Chris? Was it Chris West who was standing in for Tim last month?
Jim West is his name.
Jim, all right. Sorry, you're right. So we are ready for the next approval of minutes, sir.
Okay. Can you get a motion to approve the minutes?
Yeah, a motion to approve the amendment, last month's minutes.
I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
We are now in the public comment period. If you are online and you would like to make a comment, please press the raise your hand button. While we're waiting to see if a hand raises, we do have an email that came in as a public comment to our Parks Advisory Board email. It's from Dave Weston. Believes that the disc golf course at Hawkinson Meadows is a great success, and he would encourage us to explore the development of another course. He referenced Frenchman's Bar and Orchards Community Park and some other sites he didn't identify specifically. Just so everyone knows is that Hawkinson Meadows started out at Frenchman's Bar. We ran into some environmental constraints and overlays that led us to transition that project to Hawkinson. So that site will be difficult for us to do anything there. However, we are taking the feedback we are in regards to some updates to master plans to consider that as a potential recreational amenity as we move forward. So that'll be part of our process, just like at Hazeldale master plan update. We got communication on a disc golf course there. We considered it there as well. That site did not lend itself based off of all the other recreational demands, but still that is something that we do consider, and we will continue to do that. And Mr. Meeks.
Hey, Rocky, the challenge that we have with Hawkinson Meadows, as I've discussed before, is the closest public transportation stop is it's far away, right? It's way too far to make it really accessible for a lot of folks without a vehicle or electric bikes.
And to that, Don, it's like you're setting me up, is this gentleman also says that he recommends starting a parking fee because he notices that by 10 a.m. most of the license plates are from Oregon there in the park, of course. So might as well do that. It's the opposite side of what you're saying, is it's such a huge draw, but that we can't get locals in there as well, which is our primary.
In particular with the Oregon plated vehicles, I get that. But that doesn't mean that they're necessarily from out of region. So I'm very sensitive to calling a Oregon plated vehicle in Oregonian, because just dropping off the kids at school, half the vehicles that drop kids at school are plated with Oregon plates. But it, I mean, so if we did charge, great, that's another revenue source. It just doesn't get at our challenge of offering disc golf course to people without vehicles.
And that is well, well taken. And I know, I believe the city course is on, is potentially, but that is something as we look at future assets, you know, that's one of those pillars that we'll be looking at is continue to try to improve access and equity as we continue to develop these recreation sites. So it's not lost on me at all. I do understand what you're saying and we want to work on that. So with that, Chair, I think we've
closed. Manager's report.
Ah, thank you for the record, Rock Houston, manager. So we, I believe last month we talked about, we had five or six positions in park operations and we were filling those. It appears that all those are filling. I think we have June 1st, I believe is the last one. We may have one more. I think it is June 1st is our last. We're working on a, I'm going to call it an academy. So we're working to have a, I think it's going to be Wednesdays when we bring all those people together for training and exposure to our property. So it's kind of nice. It allows us to look at our, we've developed a training requirements from a job hazard analysis and prior practice in our modules. So we, as management and with our operations team, we've identified a lot of trainings that need to be done in the first week, in the first month, first 3 months, first 6 months, or just if you're actually doing that type of work. And so this is allowing us to see if that's effective and achievable. So that's not only do we have much more bright smiley faces, but we're practicing our safety modules there as well for people. We do have a big announcement that for Public Works, and that is that our deputy director has decided to step down and take another opportunity. So that's Priya. So she will be with us until the end of June. So we're working to with her to wrap up some things and do the oversight. She is, I believe, taking on a position with the city of Portland. You know, they're changing their governance model over there to having a city administrator and deputy city administrators. And I believe, if I remember correctly, she's going to be one of those deputy city administrators. So it's city administrator. And so it'll be over Public Works, Water, and Environmental Services. That's what we call the Bureau of Environmental Services. So what I do is it's a great reflection on Clark County and the caliber of employees we have here that, you know, we get someone plucked to take on such a large role there. So I believe the director is working on opening up a recruitment for her replacement here in the very near future. So, and
flying pan into the fire, isn't
it? I think starting any new governance model in any organization is always an experience. I've been trying to slowly change organizations and moving that boat. This is at a whole other exponentially higher level. So I think she's the right person. She's very positive and engaging. And so I think it'll be fun, a lot of fun and a loss for us.
In here.
Yeah. We had a huge temperature change and it was amazing how many people we had out this last weekend. We had a couple parks with some law enforcement issues, we'll say user issues that we're working on. And I won't get into the details, but it's frustrating. But hopefully now that the sun's out, people start getting used to being patrons who are not not as difficult for us to manage. So, and is there anything else? We've got a donation at the Dogwood donation. We talked about that several months ago. It's 0.88 acres. It's a HOA property adjacent to Dogwood Park. We're getting close. We've got through, I think we jumped through everything paperwork wise to be able to bring that to council probably here in June, by the end of June, for a for the transfer of that property or donation of that property. It'll add extra property for meeting our recreational needs within PIF District 6. It's 6. There is it. There's and in our level of service. So that's good. We got our appraisal back for the acquisition of PIF District 8 off of 50th Street at 4.7 acres. So that should be moving forward this month to closing. So that's something we already presented. It'll be an expansion of LaLonde Neighborhood Park. A lot of natural area, about half of it is going to be natural area. Allows for the potential expansion of a bridge and expansion to another neighborhood there to make that access easier for recreational need. There is some other negotiations going on for some other acreage that would add a community park and or some natural area along the Vancouver River. And so if that does move forward, it would add 129 acres ish. Or was it 80?
90?
90.
I think it's 90.
Oh, because of the tribal or the
tidelands.
So it's about 90 acres. So it it's in the Vancouver Island area. I like to call it the Vancouver Island area. So Vancouver Lake, Fisherman's Bar Island, the island out there. And that would be impacting 5th District 9 and 1 and 10, potentially in regards to recreational levels of service. So, as well as potentially legacy land funding for that asset. And as soon as we get negotiations done, we will show you more information on that. And we have PSA going for legacy lands, purchase and sale agreement, sorry, for 12 acres out by Salmon Morgan Creek. So we have a negotiated a PSA, and we'll be moving that forward to council the next month.
It's a PSA?
Purchase and sell agreement. Sorry.
That's... And Daniel,
thank you. Yes, that's the one that we're talking about. Now I've gotten ahead of myself. As such, are there any questions on the manager's report?
Add a few things to the manager's report.
Yes, let's add these dates. Thank you.
So, thank you, Rocky. David Stipe, planning and development manager. We're taking the next 2 weeks of May off. Because we have 9 community engagement activities in June alone. So we're going to be very busy in June. So June 1st, we have a park play date at Geyser Middle School. We're replacing the playground equipment out there. So we're going to go out there. Members of the planning and development team are going to go out there with the board to show the people out there on that given day, what we're gonna do. That's from 11 to 1 on the 1st. What's that?
Geyser
Middle School Park. June 4th, we are going to council for the hearing for the, hopefully the adoption of the Heritage Farm Sustainability Plan. June 5th, we're going to Historic Preservation Commission for a public meeting to talk about Heritage Farm and the Hazeldale Park. Update on the sustainability plan, update on public access at Heritage Farm, and the accessibility improvements and master plan update at Hazeldale. As you know, that both of those properties are historic sites. They're registered on the federal and state historic register. June 6th, we're having a little party at Cozy Camp Park from 4 to 6 p.m. We have some lawn games and some treats. So sort of a Cozy Camp Park.
It is off of
29th and 175th.
75th.
Now it's a Vista neighborhood at the very top.
Yeah. It's a park we built last year and never had a formal sort of ribbon cutting. So we're just going to go out there and celebrate the park with staff and with neighbors. And as I mentioned, we'll have some lawn games and some activities out there just for a few hours, 4 to 6 p.m. We'll be at the Salmon Creek Farmers Market. We meeting somebody from planning and development, maybe admin team, on June 13th to talk about parks and lands. We will have a park play date at Sifton Neighborhood Park. Same setup as Geyser, because we're replacing the playground equipment at Sifton Neighborhood Park in the fall from 11 to 1. And then June 20th, Mount Vista Property Neighborhood Park Master Plan Open House. So we're kicking off a master planning project for the Mount Vista property in the Mount Vista neighborhood. I don't know the cross streets, I apologize. It is at the iTech Prep School, which is at the Vancouver School District, I believe, from 6 to 8 p.m. Same format as our current master plan project. We start the presentation at 6:30, hybrid format still. And then June 30th, we'll be at the Vancouver Farmers Market, sharing space with the compost or recycle program. We'll have a lot of information at the Air 10, talking about parks and lands. So we're trying to, this year, go to where people are instead of asking them to come to active. We have a team of planners that are interested in doing that sort of work, so we're going to lean into it.
And Amy will work on getting you guys invited, if you're not already invited, to our May 29th peak season kickoff barbecue, and that'll be at Frenchman's Bar, I believe. So it'll just be hamburgers and hot dogs and a good time for
probably
lunch.
A straw hat.
I'll bring out the old straw hat.
There into the rice.
We do have meatless options. What do they call it? Wonder meat or whatever, what you call it. Wonder, is it Wonder?
No.
Yeah, it is.
Impossible Burger.
Impossible.
Impossible Burger. I will bring some vegan side dishes, because we do have a vegan member of the planning and development team. So there will be some options.
More.
Not nearly as much options as the meatitarians of the group. So. Lots of hot dogs.
Yeah.
I'll bring your barbecue package. You bring in your barbecue.
I will. I need to check to see if I can get that Traeger again. Hopefully, I didn't. So, we have a member of our IT department that's got a portable Traeger, and it's two huge Traegers on a trailer. And
he likes to barbecue.
It's proper.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's proper.
Yeah, like a little tailgater one. No, this is a real deal.
It's probably 1,600 square inches grilling capacity.
Four grills.
It's not enough though, because we had it all full last time.
Yeah, sure did.
Still couldn't get it all there. But yeah, and then
Looking at these, in the 1st and the 20th, those are the only open houses similar to that, correct?
The 20th is a neighborhood park open house, yeah. And the 30th is a farmer's market.
The 1st is a type of open house where we're sort of a
we'll be in the
organic
park.
Play date feedback.
Yeah. And then Jacob Houston has returned to us from unexploded ordnance training. I know you all want to go. Sign up with Rocky if you want to learn
about Month in College Station, Texas.
Yeah. Camp Bonneville still has areas that have not been swept for unexploded ordinances. And so anytime, is it ordinances or is it ordinance I?
It's ordinance.
Yeah, I like ordinance I. Whenever we do ground disturbing activity out there, we need to have what's called a UXO level one. And so Jacob volunteered. He's got 20 years. He's a retired Air Force and he's got an appropriate background. And he's the first person that has done this training for us. I believe Eric Harrison will go. But anytime we dig a hole for a fence post, we need to have somebody that we can notify if we hear metal against metal sound. And it's way more complicated than I'm making it sound. But he's back, passed all his tests. We're happy to have him here. So back in the fold. Yeah.
And I want to commend you for comments you made about who people are other than them. This my kids know.
we have done very good with our open houses, a lot of really good attendance, but we're still not getting to certain segments of the community, and so we're also going to work on trying to reach out to certain demographics and nationalities.
That's what I've noticed, because when I'm there, I'm happy when I see old folks like me. It's fine. But my kids are old. I like to see the millennials because there's a future there.
Yes.
That's a good approach.
Yeah. I have high hopes for the June 30th event at the Vancouver Farmers Market downtown because it's a Saturday. It's a very popular, as some of you may know. I believe that the Salmon Creek Farmers Market is during the week, and so we may have an older demographic there. But we're still gonna poke around at these other public events and hand out brochures and answer questions.
Yeah.
Lindy has her hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to share that this fall is when we're going to focus more on cultural events, and we've been working with some local groups to find out more about where we could attend and who we can reach there. So, but we're trying to get through a farmer's market circuit and get kind of used to attending these types of events and what's that like for us and how can we be of the best help and communicate to folks. And then we'll be, I think, ready to try out other things in the fall.
And then the last item that I forgot to bring up is that, through our updating of our charter, we identified that Clark County Code identifies that we should be offering a liaison for any school district within the county. And so we've reached out to all the school districts in the county, and you'll notice that we have Rachel Best here from Camas on our sheet as one more person who's confirmed to be that liaison person. We did identify that school board meetings meet on the second Tuesday of the month around the same time. So there is three or four that we got communicated back that they were interested. However, there's a conflict. So we will continue to engage periodically with the school districts and continue to provide that opportunity to be here and hear what we're doing and gather information. So with that, we don't have any unfinished business.
Woo-hoo. Finish our business around here.
And are you sharing your screen, ma'am? Mm-hmm. Perfect. All right.
Yes,
momentarily, it'll catch up, and a beautiful slideshow will appear on our screen.
Too many things. Oh, look.
What?
Voila. Hang on, I gotta. Maybe I can't. Oh,
My mind is blown.
There we go.
Now it's blown.
So I'm Danielle Cowley. I'm the program coordinator for Legacy Lands, Lands Coordinator. We are here today to showcase one of our acquisitions that we're moving forward on. So this is the Cedar Golf, Cedars LLC Golf Acquisition. It's 12.7 acres to the east in the red section. It actually adjoins Salmon Morgan, and it also has Morgan Creek in it that eventually dumps into Salmon Creek, which is flowing through Salmon Morgan and Gordy Joma. This acquisition is similar in character to Salmon Morgan. It has a lot of native species. It has floodplain. It has mature forest. It also has some open space and some cascara, beautiful cascara trees throughout. There is some Re-Canary grass, which is common, but it is overall in pretty good health. Here's kind of some pictures of what it looks like today. So as you see the gated entrance, it's just past that gated entrance on the west side. So there is no street access at this point, other than through the development that dead ends there. And then there is, like I said, cedars, ferns, etc. Here's a few more pictures so you can kind of see the cascara, the wetland feel, and then you can see the movement of Salmon Creek throughout the property.
For the non-cascara knowing, are those the skinny little trees?
Yes, sorry, they're the skinny, like, unfolded. Yeah, the deciduous trees that don't have any leaves. So they're kind of like grayish like looking.
They look like
little ash trees. Okay. And we did this a couple months ago, so as you can tell, it's probably not the best time to take photos, but that is what we had. Is it going to catch up? No, it's not. That's weird.
Yeah, there it goes.
So just to remind you all of the guidance manual that was approved, we kind of go through a project matrix, and we are on the left-hand side. So we work on the approval of the capital plan that includes certain sub areas, and we have Salmon Creek, Upper Salmon Creek, identified as an acquisition area. And then that is adopted by council, and it's part of our budgeting process. And then we draft a purchase and sale agreement. We go to the property owner, we talk about a price point, they sign it, and then we go to council for further signatures to sign the purchase and sale. Once that's complete, we do appraisals, and if the appraisals come in correctly based on what we agreed to on the terms, the initial terms of the purchase and sale, we close. So we're trying to speed up this process for acquisitions and not drag property owners a little longer than normal.
What term is the accuracy of the appraisals?
So it takes 4 months for appraisals. It takes 3 months for the first appraisal and 1 month for a review appraisal. And it's a specific style of appraisal, so it's a lot more, it's highest and best use. The property owner is selling this property for $700,000. It is appraised, or it's assessed at $900,000. They don't believe it's worth $900,000. So they have it right now in the open market for $700,000. And so it matches the criteria with it being adjacent to a property we already own. It protects streams, it protects habitat. It kind of hits all those high points. And then,
in addition, as we're going through our master planning in at Gordy Joma area, this potentially could provide an easterly access point and disperse the use there as well. So
there's a strategic plan for expansion. That's why you're doing this.
And I believe they sold the other parcel that brings you out to 188. Ultimately, it would have been great to have access from
eastern edge.
East to the eastern edge of 100. Yeah. I'm going to call it 188, but out there, so that people don't have to go through that neighborhood to get to that. So again, it's part of the Salmon Creek Greenway strategy that we have. We have a greenway proposal from, I guess it's not the Columbia River, it's actually Lake River is where it dumps into.
Yeah.
All the way up to here and a little bit beyond, sort of that whole long-term ditching greenway trail, but a greenway specifically through here to for fish, you know. The last thing is we're trying to lock our seller quicker, and that's why we're getting going to the PSA. So we're trying to lock up that agreement and then spend the funds, where before we were expending our funds on appraisals and then going to the seller, and that allowed other people to come in and take the deal away from us at times.
The 2024 to 2029 Parks Capital Plan included upper Salmon Creek and the lower Salmon Creek project. Those were in later dates, like 27, 28, or 26 and 28, something like that. And this project falls like right smack, almost on the line between those two divisions of upper versus lower Salmon Creek. But, it's an easy connection.
No, I don't know. I applaud you guys for forward thinking, and that's why I asked that question: is what did you see that can become something else? Yes. Strategy, because over the long run it saves a lot of money.
And the other thing that I didn't acknowledge is that we have, you know, winter steelhead coming up Salmon Creek. We also have salmon coming up Salmon Creek in these reaches, and who's to say they aren't coming up Morgan? So, I mean, this is potentially spawning habitat as well, or locations for them to get further up. So this is a cold water seed we're protecting at this point for the larger Salmon Creek Greenway.
And so did I understand that you don't have an easy access from the east side,
correct,
even with that dead-end road there?
Correct. Yeah, you have to go through towards Cedars Golf Course, the clubhouse, old clubhouse.
Can you go back to the
bigger
map?
Yeah.
And so currently we have a developed trailhead, we'll call it at Salmon Morgan Creek. It's two or three parking stalls. That's
so right
for 183rd-ish. Is it?
You're talking about down here.
No,
by the golf course headquarters.
So I think
access in right there.
Access right here.
So we have a small trailhead there, and then where you see the brown and green skinny lines off 152nd. Right there. So on the left side of that, on the brownish side, we have potentially will be a trailhead there that'll be in the sort of the center of the Gordie Joma. The quarter there is a railroad that sort of splits the two parcels. And then we are exploring, we don't know if it'll work, but off of, I think it's 142nd, which goes all the way into Battleground, is another potential access point.
Well, it's already used. But I had the last spot last night.
But from a car parking.
10 car parks.
Yeah, right now it is a pump station.
Yeah.
And so we do have some potential upland in there to where we could pull people off the road and have a small trailhead. There may be permitting and other issues that get in the way of that. So what we're trying to do is with this 2.5 miles and with the neighborhood there, we're trying to disperse the use. And right now we're having a lot of complaints that people are going into those neighborhoods and parking on the shoulder and congesting, blocking driveways and things like that. So as we move forward to the master plan, this acquisition and these other are all, it allows us more ability to meet the demand and continue to preserve natural resources here.
Was this area part of the golf course, or was it?
No, so this actually was, this is owned by the former Salmon Morgan owner that sold it to the county. And they are one of the owners at one point of the golf course before Gordie Joma. So this is somebody who got our mailer on our master plan who called us and said, hey, our property's for sale. You should look at it. I think it'd be a good addition to Salmon Morgan. So outreach basically got us.
And during the appraisal process, you're basically making sure that you're accidentally paying above fair market?
Correct.
Yeah, we have.
For the highest and best use for a park.
So, yeah, we can't spot. And what we, what is called as a yellow book appraisal or a uniform axle meets federal guidelines. And our WSDOT standards and RCO standards. So if we were going to get a grant on this in the future, would qualify to for us to expend get grant funds.
And this is a very special appraisal, and that it takes that long.
Yep.
It seems like a long time. Okay.
And so if you were to go and get an appraisal to sell your house, I don't know, where they going for about $1,000, and we end up spending about $10,000 on average for. The appraisal and the review appraisal because of the Uniform Act and yellow book they sometimes call
it. And then someone could actually come in on top of you before that appraisal's done and say, oh, I want to buy it. I'll pay what's on the books as its value.
That's what was happening before. That's what was happening before, and that's why we're having to sign the PSA. And once we get everyone to sign the PSA before we start that process, they're locked in.
And, oh, good. Okay.
And so the only reason that they typically that they can get out of it is if it the appraised value comes in under what they've agreed to. So they have a period of time. And what we're trying to do, this one's unique. A lot of times we're trying to do is a floor and a ceiling. So we'll say we're not going to pay over this. And they won't accept under this. And so we have a little bandwidth to then go forward, and that provides a protection for us and for them, because it may appraise for $2 million, but we may not have $2 million. And so as such, we need an ability to say, no, we can't pay that. The flip side is as a seller, they want to make sure that they can get what they want out of it.
And that also $500,000.
And so what we're trying to do is provide something that's flexible so they can say thanks but no thanks. And the same as we could. And it seems to be speeding the process up overall, because we were averaging closer to 2 years to do a transaction 3 years ago. And now we're in the 6-ish month phase right now. It seems like most transactions. So for example, we had two transactions we brought in January and February to council for PSA to be approved and signed. We closed on one of those already, and we're ready to close on another one in the next month. So we're under 6 months there. Now there was a bunch of months of work prior to that, of course, but once the PSA is signed, we're trying to get them done in 12 weeks. And quicker if appraisals. Yeah. And, you know, and it's the hats off is to the sellers drinking our Kool-Aid and understanding what we're trying to do, and staff going out there and working with these sellers and promoting all the benefits that we have. The biggest benefit we have with Legacy Lands is we pay the excise tax, so that's a 1.7% benefit right there then and there for someone to sell property to us. Anyone who's listening, please tell your friends and family. You've got 5 acres that's undeveloped anywhere in the city limits or on EGA, call us. But I think it's been an effective change. And I think the fastest we were able to get an approval to go to make an offer, because it wasn't in our capital plan officially, was 2 weeks. They didn't accept our offer, but we were able to turn something around in 2 weeks, which was lightning fast, warp speed compared to what we were doing before.
So incidentally, since we're talking about Salmon Morgan Creek and Gordy Joma, the Callis Tribe, we may have talked about this previously, they received a grant to do some planning work on habitat improvements to Salmon Creek in this part of the watershed, and we're partnering with them. They have identified a consultant, Interfluve, and they're doing scope and fee negotiation. We have followed behind them by about a month, and have solicited for consultants to do a master plan for what I call natural resource-based recreation improvements at the property. So it's just trails and trail supporting infrastructure. And we received 8 proposals last Friday from consultants. And we're in the process of evaluating those proposals. That's a lot for us. 8 proposals is quite a good haul. And so we'll be doing a public outreach process for master plan development here. And it will include Salmon Morgan Creek. And if we close on this parcel, we will include that as part of our master planning work. So we're excited about that project moving forward. It's a really great community asset, that property.
When we acquired the property, we committed to doing the master planning in the next 20 years. So this partnership has really allowed us to fast track this work. Any further questions for Daniel?
You do have more parking up there besides at that substation. At the where 159th butts up into the neighborhood.
And
where the old golf course headquarters was, there's a gravelly area that probably holds another 10 cars.
Yeah, along the railroad right of way.
Right, yes, yeah. And so that's actually, I don't know who owns that right along 159.
We do.
But that's a perfect little parking spot.
Yeah, it's informal, right, and we're going to keep that informal. Because of our lease and those things, but that use is allowed. What we want to do is create a developed area that has those support amenities and is meeting the as best we can the demand there. So it's
there needs to be some sort of a restroom facility at a property this size, formalized parking. The parking at the pump station is not appropriate because you have to back into the road to get out of it. The county engineer doesn't like that.
So. Well, I wouldn't mind backing out on 159th, but backing out onto 42nd.
Yeah, and that's where
the kids go drag racing. It's kind of scary.
Yeah, going down the hill.
We're not encouraging use, and we're not disallowing use, but we know it's getting a lot of use, and we want to get these other assets there to make sure we can manage that.
We've also evaluated all 11 bridges. We've done inspection and load rating on all 11 bridges at the property with a bridge engineer, and we're moving forward with some planning on likely some removals, some repairs that would be informed by our master plan and the circulation out there. So
you're going to do weed control out in that area?
We already have our noxious weed staff out there doing work on our, maybe not every weed, of course, but on those that are.
What about yellow fly?
Yeah, that's on the list. They were out today doing the giant hogweed on the property.
That's the iris.
That's that. Yeah. And I think I found my very first giant hogweed right near the substation parking in the, what do you call that? Gordy-Joma
Family Joma.
There's a native. There's a native lookalike, so you have to kind of look at the species. But we had staff.
I showed him the picture.
Oh, okay.
He says it kind of looks like it.
Yeah.
It could be. Yeah. I've misidentified cow parsnip before in the bottoms, but this I think is my first nasty giant hogweed, and there are multiple instances of that in that same general area.
Yeah, it's right near the creek over on that corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good, get it, man. It spreads.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, my name is on the next item, but I'm going to defer to David to provide an update on the first quarter capital improvement plan update.
Back here. All right. But my pleasure to give you a little bit of an update on the 2024 capital improvement plan work that we're doing. Plus, give you a little look ahead on the 25 to 30 plan. I'm sorry that these slides are very text intensive, but a lot of what we're doing this year is planning and some maintenance work that's not all that great to photograph. So I don't have any pretty pictures this time around. I'll just jump right into it because Rocky's got a longer presentation about the budget. And so I just want to go through this really quickly with all of you if it catches up. So some real quick quarter one accomplishments. We had a council work session on the Heritage Farm Sustainability Plan. We talked about it here in the past. I mentioned that we have a June 4th hearing to adopt the plan. So we received some minimal feedback from council on that that draft plan. So we're taking it back as a final plan. We've completed largely the public outreach process for the Minnehaha property, tentatively called Trillium Neighborhood Park. Obviously, we'll be bringing it to you before we take it to council, but we're getting started on developing the master plan document. We have the preferred plan. We have cost estimates. We've shared those elements with you. I would say, and these are just ballpark figures, we're about 50% complete on the Hazelbelt Community Park. A master plan update, it's those ADA improvements, it's some improvements on the undeveloped flag lot that's between Heritage Farm and 68. There's another 5 acres there. Would include, like I mentioned, accessibility improvements from the parking lot to the lower shelter, the upper shelter, the upper playground, and then an expansion of the parking lot. And we were out there Friday and today exploring an accessible trail alignment up to the viewpoint where you can see Mount St. Helens, Mount Adams. And so we put some pin flags in, and the survey crew came out this morning to survey our alignment. We'll see if we can get up to the top of the slope with the 5% trail alignment. I'm very confident that we'll be able to do that, which is really exciting. We've reviewed 90% plans and specifications for the Harmony Sports Complex improvements. We experienced a little hiccup with the intersection there at 192nd. And 13th, the city might have some alternative plans than stoplights. So we've decided to move ahead with our improvements and just continue to have a dialogue with them. And we may need to make some last minute changes if they decide to do a roundabout as opposed to a stoplight, which came as a surprise to us.
Of course. I remember when we were talking about the Harmony Sports Complex, the open house. There was a gentleman who was somewhat concerned, just put it mildly. The sports, the light that you're talking about, is that the same thing?
No, so no. He's on the corner of the current stoplight. And so this would be, are we going to continue with the stoplight or they're going to put a roundabout in there? So there's a design option that they're exploring, which would be.
Now, was that because of his concern?
His concerns were about the field lights.
Not the stoplight. Yeah. So our initial conversations with the city's engineer was that they weren't anticipating that a roundabout would perform very well, given the type of traffic that sports complex would generate, like all at once, right? And so I'd say that it's more likely that it ends up being a stoplight when we move forward and our improvements are more receptive to their improvements in the future because we're only making part of the size improvements.
Who the other side of the street couldn't get the ownership of that?
That's already developed on the east side of 192nd. There's residences. And so those improvements, the city is going to be doing lane improvements and curb and gutter improvements where there isn't curb and gutter. We're doing some of the frontage improvements out in front of Harmony Sports Complex, but we're working with the city to not put something in that they tear out. It's my goal to not ever look like a government wasting money. And
everything around there would be tight.
Yeah, I think that's the design we saw looked like it was going to expand beyond the right-of-way. The right-of-way is very robust in that area, as it's another 30 or more feet beyond the current to the west specifically.
The schematic plan that the consultant interviewed with, they basically presented an idea for roundabouts on 192nd in their interview, and that intrigued the city. And it shows an alignment shift to the west, which would impact our property. There's not been any design work, so we don't know what sort of right-of-way we would need to relinquish, for lack of a better term. But we have a meeting on Monday with our real property folks and their right-of-way consultant, because they don't have a right-of-way. They don't have a real property section in the city building. So we're done reviewing the permit plans for the Curtin Spring, should be Curtin Creek, excuse me, Community Park entitlement. So Curtin Creek, as you remember, we were over budget. We needed to develop that phases, and so we've reviewed those plans. The drawings have been reviewed, and they're wrapping those up to make submittal to planning for approval to move forward with design. And we kicked off our meeting, our design process with the consultant for the pickleball courts and the softball. Looks like it's going to be a softball soccer combination field, the east side of the existing softball field, with the consultants, sort of preliminary traffic analysis. Some of the stuff, give Rocky an update. Preliminary traffic analysis, trip generation analysis. The traffic engineer doesn't think that we're going to have to do any frontage improvements. It's not, our improvements aren't going to generate enough traffic to require us to spend money in right of way, which I would much rather spend money on pickleball courts than on curb better and sidewalk in right of way. So that was good news, and we'll be having one more public meeting for that. We haven't scheduled that yet. We had a public meeting last year, or the year before, it seemed like.
Yeah, it was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, to introduce the topic of pickleball there, it was very well received. And then we're going to have a neighborhood meeting, a public meeting, kickoff for Mount Vista property in Embry Park. I mentioned that in that June sort of meeting room there. So those are some of the things that we've accomplished or been doing in the first part of the year. A few more things quickly. We did kick off the access enhancement project at Klein Line Pond in Salmon Creek Park. Survey works complete, geotechnical works complete. That's the project that we got the grant for to do public access improvements there. And 65% complete plans for the Cougar Creek Wetland Enhancement Project at Heritage Farm. We reviewed those. And that's going to go for permitting. That's the 5-6 acre wetland project on Cougar Creek, water quality project. There's been miscellaneous building demolitions and fencing projects that have been ongoing. Fencing at Orchards, demolition of the house at Winkler, the sort of non-glamorous business end of what we do. The park host site at Lucia Falls, the utilities have been installed and the electrical inspection has been completed. So It is ready for a RV host, park host, and I believe we have somebody interested in vetting that person, I believe.
I believe we have someone who's waiting for it to get signed.
Yeah.
And it's been a bit waiting a bit.
So we're 65.
Can you explain what that is, and the park host, the RV host?
So, previously at Lucia Falls, we had a manufactured home there that actually was owned by a caretaker, and we acquired it from them, and it it was a point in its life that it was going to require a lot of expenditures to bring it up to date. So we demoed it, and instead we put in an RV pad where we can have someone, a vagabond is what they call themselves, to come in and be a host with their own housing. It saves us costs from water, sewer, electric, and just upkeep is much lower for us. It allows us to move things through there at a much lower cost. And so we're transitioning away from having houses to RV spots for our hosts out at primarily regional parks. We have a couple community parks that we've identified, Pacific Park in our master plan. We have a host site planned to go there. At Klein Line Salmon Creek, we have a host site, two host sites planned to go in there where we had a house before. So we're trying to make that transition, and this is just that phase.
I like that idea, actually.
Yeah, and for the price to update this one time, it's a little bit more than the roofing costs would have been for the structure that I think we were supposed to paint it to. So between those two costs, a one-time cost and a little bit more than what routine maintenance and the other places we have furnaces and flooring and all those other things, as well as a landlord. We have a different threshold to make sure that those buildings meet that minimally adequate, which again takes, we're not the best landlords. We're parks and recreation and such. We were trying to do what we're good at and taking away those things that we're not as good at.
Yeah, so that's a practice in a lot of different locations. I mentioned tearing down the Minkler home just because we, there's not good landlords, and then we're tearing down a home in the fall at Pearson Natural Area, which was part of the purchase of that property was to remove it.
That makes sense. You know what I admire about TVP and Pasadena? Parks and Black Hunting is you guys are forward looking. You know, I've lived in other places in this country, Italy, you know, it's like people don't think like this. They think more stagnant. You know, what we have in 1960 is what we should have today, and no, it's not like that. And that's what I always talk about in the lighthouse, which is if we think like them, I think we're gonna get the future right.
Another millennial or Gen Z,
yeah. Well, we're continuing, you know, and I think our growth is forcing us to continue to think a decade or two ahead, to be ahead, just like the people before us in acquiring a lot of these properties, 17 more that we have to develop. If it wasn't for that forethought, we wouldn't.
In age in Richfield, yeah. People are between 40 and over. That tells you the story.
It reminds me of in grad school, I went to Vietnam and we worked with provincial government, and the average age in Vietnam was 30. And so it's just, you know, how, you know, as an American, I was thinking about Vietnam War and all these things, and the majority of the people in that country, were, when they think of war, they think of the war with China that occurred after our Vietnam War. And so it's just interesting how, you're right, that perspective changes and continue, and that's where we're hoping that these continue with staff coming up with these new ideas for engagement, help us to reach those people who aren't using our properties, and hopefully they can keep our finger on the pulse. Just to use
Why would you put a park host in Pacific?
So Pacific, to be frank, we have a non-recreational use density, vandalism, and other things.
Gotcha.
It was right on the edge of the city limits, and so on the west side, we have a lot of unhoused individuals who are creating damage to our property, as well as so. And the use level there is pretty high, so having a host there could help increase our level of service for light maintenance, for the restrooms and garbage.
Yeah.
we talked about having a homestead orchards because of the activity that goes on there all hours of the day. So, but there is the, in the Pacific Community Park Master Plan, it's actually a host home that's on the plan, but we would actually roll that out at this moment. So, quickly, 95% complete on the Camp Hope water system improvements. Really what we're waiting for at this point is the tanks. They're delayed. The last I heard was sometime the week of June 15th. So once that happens, then we'll schedule the helicopter and we'll let you all know the helicopter's coming and get the tanks. Because they're going to fly them from
the health department too now.
They're going to fly them from the softball field at Louisville Regional Park over the river and up onto the hill top.
Janice is bringing the picnic. Yeah. Teresa's bringing the yard darts.
Yeah. So that was it was decided that that was the best way to do it without a big environmental impact. That was also when we were talking about doing it in February, but now we probably could take them up the hill in January. But that's the way it's going to go. Mountain Falls Bridge repair, that project was awarded to the contractor, and it will start July 8th. So if you want to use the trails at Mountain Falls and the bridge, get out there before the 8th because it will be closed until Memorial Day. What's the second?
Labor Day, probably till October.
Yeah.
So if you do want to use the trail, just use the Hanway trail.
Yeah.
And
only if you can find parking.
Yeah.
Well,
sorry.
Nature everywhere.
That is.
At any of those sites.
Major inconvenience, but it is much needed. We had the bridge inspected in 2017. There were some immediate repairs, some midterm repairs, and some long-term repairs that needed to be done. Decided to just do it all. So big project. It'd be nice to get that completed.
How long will it take?
It'll take probably until Labor Day.
The Labor Day.
Yeah.
That's what you said, October.
Yeah.
I just not caught up. Okay.
So it'll take 3 to 4 months, and a big portion of that's just going to be the staining of it.
Right? Yeah, they have to clean it. None of it can go in the river. None of it. So they have to contain all of it. So it's a slow process, big containment structure underneath it. That's why it has to be closed. Then just a real quick 2024 forecast of things that we're going to get done. Probably a highlight on there is we mentioned this sports turf will be replaced in field 4 in the fall, starting in September. The Sifton and Geyser Playground, which we mentioned earlier, the removal of the play equipment will start in August and the replacement will be in September. And we'll be converting those from chips, engineered wood fiber, to playground turf. So if you're interested in what playground grass looks like, you can go to Esther Short. They put in playground grass there. It's basically this, but spring gear, because it has to meet the fall protection requirements. So that'll be fun. And it's going to be tan.
Tan?
Yeah, I picked tan. we just talked about Mountain Falls.
So it'll match our reduction of irrigation.
Sure.
Color scheme.
I just don't think that the fake green grass looks good next to the real green grass. So I thought we would try tan. It's cooler. So obviously it's not a popular choice with my boss. So yeah. I'll be polishing up my resume.
It's a surprise. Just that, right? Rocky, it can adjust.
So real quickly, just a sneak peek at the 25 to 30 master plan or capital improvement plan as it's being drafted. And we'll talk a little bit about the potential for some changes to it when Rocky gets into the budget conversation. But our major maintenance dollars sort of hover above and below that $2 million price range. The only reason that 2029 is $936,000 is because we really haven't gotten so deep into the development of the new 25 to 30 draft that we haven't added some major maintenance items. And then the 2030, $2 million is just a placeholder that we shoot for. Some of the major maintenance additions in the CIP that are notable is the footbridge that needs to be replaced at Lacamas Regional Park, the Louisville Regional Park playground replacement. We shifted some things around, and instead of doing Frenchman Bar, we're going to be doing Louisville Regional Park playground replacement. It'd be a big project because there's a lot of old metal playground over there. I've put tentatively in the draft plan a big chunk of money for roof replacement on the shelters out there. They're all shake roofs, and they're really important structures that we need to be paying attention to. They all look pretty miserable. So we need to start replacing those. So we'll do as many as we can with the money that we have in the draft plan. And we'll get into the specifics on those dollar figures when we come to you with our draft plan, ideally next month. And then we got a inspection and load rating on the pedestrian bridge at Louisville Regional Park at the South Island section and the vehicle bridge. And the vehicle bridge needs to be repaired. Working on three different options. One of them to replace it entirely because it's an old rail car, not unlike the Lacamas Regional Park Bridge that's been in the plan for several years. And then the footbridge that goes over to the South Island section is actually in much worse condition than probably. These are very old structures that we haven't done a ton of maintenance on. And these rail cars are, we don't know how old they were when they were converted to bridges. A lot of times they're no longer serviceable as rail cars, and that's how you end up with it as a bridge. So there's something wrong with it from a railroad perspective.
We have, 56 pedestrian bridges in the system, and we should be doing an inspection every 5 years on each one of those bridges. So I have my crystal ball. We're going to be talking about bridges a lot over the next 10 years.
We actually, Evelyn Ives, who's our capital project manager, is also a PE. She's in charge of our sort of bridges and overwater structures, so bridges, piers, and those sorts of things. We don't have a lot of piers and boardwalks, but she's been working on putting an inventory together and going through it with the public works bridge engineer. And when we first gave the public works bridge engineer a list of our bridges, she's like, well, this almost doubles the bridge inventory for the entire county. So we have almost as many bridges as the roads department has in our system. And a lot of them have not been inspected at the same rate. We don't have nearly as many vehicle bridges, though, but we do have a few. If you compare the capital plan for 24 to 29, it was at 13 million. So this number includes the 24 number, and then the CIP that we're currently headed toward will be that 12 to 14 million, real close to the same for major maintenance. And that's anything that we wouldn't do through small works or limited small works and our preventative maintenance dollars, which is a different pot of money that we'll talk about later, and we'll talk about it again. This is lagging, I apologize. So the next slide is the capital development slide. This is where a lot of our capital money is. And there's two categories of capital development. We will again talk about that in a little bit. New park capital improvements and what I call stewardship capital. I guess we're going to call it stewardship capital. And that's capital improvements in our existing parks, so facelifts, those sorts of things.
New assets.
Or new assets in park, like the pickleball courts and the ball fields at Pacific Park. I'll be happy to share these slides with you, Janice, so you don't have to
take a picture. So I don't have to take a picture of it? Okay.
So we will be, this will be on our webpage as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I know 30, 29, 28, those will be a little bit So are you saying that 25 to 27, those are not accurate?
The top row is with the, yeah, the top row is what's been approved in the current 24 to 29 capital plan. So that $12 million next year, it includes the construction of Curtin Creek Community Park at $6 million and change, and then almost $3 million at Harmony Sports Complex. That's why that number is so big and surprising. So because we normally wouldn't be in that situation. It's just that those two projects were on skates for a while and they just piled up in 25, and so we don't normally do $12 million worth of capital improvements in 1 year.
It's Anderson Dairy.
Anderson Dairy property is out
88.
It's a 10-acre community park property that we purchased from the Anderson family, not the big Anderson family, different Andersons, I guess. And we've been working with Linda Anderson, the property owner, who's still living on the property, prior property owner, the person we purchased the property from. She's still living on the property. We've negotiated a lease with her, and in February of next year, she'll be moving out of the house. And we will be doing structural evaluation, environmental evaluations of the house, dairy barn, and the loafing shed, to see if there's any reuse opportunity for those facilities, and whether we can make them handicap accessible.
Did you say how many acres?
It's 10 acres. I believe it's 9-ish, or not quite 10.
It's flat.
It's a really nice piece of field. It's a really nice flat piece of property. Mm-hmm. Big white dairy barn, classic barn.
And when we acquired it,
is amazing.
When we acquired it, the
40-foot hayloft.
The hope was to be able to reuse that classic barn as sort of a community bed space or something. And so that's part of this would be to determine that there's a house and those other structures. And so what we're trying to determine is, what is that? Are they structurally sufficient? What would the cost be to stabilize them? And if there isn't a reuse option or plan, like if it's, let's say the house, it's just not going to meet our needs, we want to be able to start removing those assets as soon as possible to reduce the tracking nuisance.
Yeah, we're going to do a better job of fencing the properties when we buy them and securing them. The property over here on 51st has some homes on it and a building on it that we'll have to evaluate.
We're gone.
We're going to tear it down.
So that's part of our acquisition. So that's the other thing is on, we're trying to do the fencing in, and if we do have to demo, it's part of our acquisition budget. So we're getting that done up front, and then we just have a blank palette for the future to manage weeds. In the previous slide, it wasn't identified because we missed out, but there is at Whipple Creek, we're working to have a professional trail builder come out and do a sort of a sustainable trails. Is that the next?
No, it's right here.
Oh, it's part of this. All right, yeah, my bad.
Part of the capital plan. Some capital other than the Anderson property and the building evaluations. The Anderson Community Park master plan is in the 24-29. Capital plan to start the master plan process, not to build the park. You'll notice in this capital plan spreadsheet that $5.5 million is sort of a guess at, you know, the development of a community park, whether it's Anderson Park or whether it's Cooper Creek Woods Community Park, is still sort of up in the air. Both of those properties have been sort of long in the offing, and I have developed our projection to master plan and build parks. So we're doing two or three neighborhood parks and then a community park. Because a community park will gobble up all the resources for a summer because they're between $5.5 and $7.5 if there's sports fields associated with them. We don't anticipate Anderson I know that Cougar Creek Woods won't have any sports fields on it, but Anderson probably won't have any sports fields on it. It might have sport courts, but it probably doesn't lend itself to ball field development, the shape of its.
It's very interesting that we have a lot of these property owners. Little to sell us property is a good thing. But at some time, I see all these developers coming to Clark County for a lot of money. What is it about us they find as appealing to want to sell it to us, of all these developers?
Good question. Because our staff are awesome. No, I think part of our pitch sometimes is legacy. So I think part of our pitch is the legacy. So, you know, Mrs. Anderson could have developed, she had another 5 acres or so that she gave to her kids, and they developed that into a neighborhood and made a lot more money. And so I think at the time she was looking at a legacy, to just talk about this one specific thing, is that here is a legacy for her and her family who've been here for, seems like, generations to have that element. So I think that's part of it in regards to that. We do have sometimes some people who are opposed to the level of development, and so sometimes we're looking to preserve, whether it be natural areas, parks, some of those properties. And sometimes it's just our patience. So like on the 50th, it was on the market for a year. We watched the price keep coming down because they wanted a lot. When we looked at it initially, we identified that more than half of it wasn't going to be developable. So we waited, and then we approach, you know, at the right time. Sometimes we approach early and then follow up. And so I think we're like, you know, I have an old colleague named Mel Huey, and he was great about being persistent. And so he would agree to something or talk about something, and right when you didn't think about it, he kind of like did like a Colombo, that's a TV show, that he would sneak in this thing. But Mel had that Colombo thing where he would say, hey, remember Rocky, this thing that you agreed to 5 years ago, where are you on that? And I think that's the same thing that we do, is we keep coming back and saying, hey, you talked about this, are you ready? And so I think we're continually persistent in moving it out. And I like to think is that we're demonstrating that we're following through on what we said. We're building and developing and preserving those assets as we promised. We're slow, but we're still trying to be moving forward and doing that.
I think you're strategic, and I think I see something else you do. Build the relationship with the community, those community engagements that contains people trust you. Now, talking about, I'm going to go back to Anderson, because you know, I appreciate those people who trust us to keep the legacy. I'm just going to ask a general, I'm not a specialist. So she sells this property, she wants to keep the legacy. We build it and we call it whatever we're going to call it, treat it. How is that legacy kept? Have we thought about how she can be remembered? So the next Anderson say, you know what, I want that legacy, I want Anderson family name to stay, even though that property may not be called that.
One thing that we're working on right now, so at Curtin Creek Community Park, there is a family called Curtin that homesteaded here, and the creek's actually named after them. They approached us at one of the open houses, and they want to do some invest in a shelter or something that has that interpretation, and so that then we have that educational interpretive panel that not only has this is donated by the Curtin family, but who is the Curtin family? So we have other ways that not just naming a park after someone, but actually we can interpret there on site. Because in 50 years or 100 years, a lot of times who that person was and their importance is lost. And I think that's something we have to continue. And when I was with State Parks in Oregon, there's a lot of Sam Boardman. No one knows who that is.
No, I know. But
he has a huge corridor, and he actually created a lot of the legacy of what state parks are in Oregon. I knew that from an administrative history, but we didn't have, you know, there's not those things. And that's sometimes this, the fear I have of naming after people, specifically if we don't do a good job as a land manager to continue to interpret that legacy, it does get lost after time. And the flip side is legacy is a lot of different ways. Sometimes it's the feeling and the experience, and you have the site that is creating memories for the next generation or future generations. And so that's another way that I think we talk about it, even though it's, we're not calling it Rocky's Playground. But again, we're talking about that this is going to be here in perpetuity as long as Clark County is here for that. So.
And you've got things like the Gordy Joel Monument.
Yeah, and that's sometimes that's part of our negotiation where to usually people are donating something to us for naming rights. And again, naming of the property is always council's prerogative. We all recommend to move stuff forward, but that is another way that we try to work to get a deal done and to move things forward.
I appreciate that. Thanks, John.
I think lastly is that with the interest rates and housing market being a little softer than maybe it was a year or two ago, that's also allowing us to actually be more quicker than some of the developers. And so sometimes they're wanting to do a lot of other, they don't want to take that risk as well of acquiring and having that on their books. And so that is something right now, I know at least one acquisition where we got turned down, and then they flipped and came back to us because we didn't have as many hurdles as the developers for once.
The developers want to buy things when the interest rates go back down.
Or they'll phase it. Sometimes developers will say, we'll buy a whole 100 acres, but as we develop it, so there's, we'll buy 5 acres now, 5 acres tomorrow, and then that can create a problem for, so I've heard.
I love the Renaissance Park. I'm biased.
Yeah. The Heritage Farm public access improvements have been in our capital plan. They're starting to sort of take shape. WSU and the Master Gardeners got a grant to build a children's garden area, and we're working with them to potentially use some of our public access dollars to help them build a building. And we're working through what public means because of the sort of public access conversation that we're having. Sustainability plan. So if we can justify using some of our public access improvement dollars to invest in their children's garden, at Mount Falls, we've been working with our roads department to try and address a really bad weekend traffic issue up there. We have a really big overflow parking lot that nobody knows about, seems like. Because there's no sign at it, people pull into that roadside parking, and we've got 50 or 60 car paved parking lot up at the top of the hill. So we're looking at making some improvements up there: bathrooms, picnic facilities, signage, those sorts of things. So that's in our draft capital plan. And then we have talked over the last year or so about putting in a water plate facility at Orchards Community Park and making some accessibility improvements there. So I developed a quick concept sketch, and we're working on a grant application with the Recreation and Conservation Office on a big sort of park refresh out of Orchards Community Park, including some parking improvements, some trail improvements, renovating the entire playground and adding shelter, playground, new bathroom, all sorts of improvements there. And then we worked on a little schematic plan for some parking improvements out at Whipple Creek Community Park to help with some of the equestrian car issues, equestrian parking versus car parking issues in the parking lot, and to make some additional circulation improvements and evaluate some of the trails in the property. So that's in the draft plan as well.
But does he evaluate some of the trails?
We would make sure that they're sustainable and that we can maintain them long term. Also talk about getting a programmatic exception for maintenance instead of having to pull a permit every time we put gravel on them.
There could be some rerouting from the accessibility and sustainability.
Yeah, I did a really quick sketch of the parking lot using sort of the standard equestrian parking standards and turn radiuses, and with a modest expansion of the actual disturbed area, we can put 20 or 30 auto spaces around the perimeter, and with some signage, keep that whole open area in the middle to be a pull through trailer parking. Really what it needs is just some formalization and some apron work. I even in this sketch have a little corral area, you know, for people that are, you know, that want to put their horse on the corral wall or whatever at the site. It may or may not be there. But we'll go through it.
That might not be needed.
Yeah, we'll go through a public process on that and get public feedback. I know that there's a lot of interest in solving that that parking issue. So we don't move the fastest in the world, but we do listen, and I've been good noodling on it and working on a budget.
That's awesome. I'll start letting my horsey friends know that.
Yeah, it's in the draft plan. I don't know exactly what year for the improvements, but I know that next year to do the design work. So
soon, you know, yeah, parking on the
perimeter. It's in the next 6 years.
I've actually suggested to cars, if you park in a row along that edge, you can get a lot of you in and still leave a little room for some parking.
Yeah, if you just widen the edge, the west edge, and put a bunch of wheel stops in there, and sort of make some formal gestures at parking, I think you'd handle most of the issues, fix some habitual sort of issues with people parking the wrong way regularly, a little bit of outreach, and we go a long way to solving the problem with a little bit of improvement there, and then concentrate our investment out there on the actual reason for going there in the trails. So,
well, your tight spot is the parking.
Yeah.
For sure, because those trails absorb a tremendous number of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think eventually we'll have to go redo the master plan and look at other access points to disperse the use of it as well. So we can.
Just, you know, Battleground Lake is going to add another parking lot.
Really?
And it's going to be paved for horse trailers.
Yeah. On the north side?
In what's currently the overflow parking, which is kind of a wet meadow area, which you don't dare go into until midsummer.
Yes.
But yeah, they're asking people, well, how many horse trailer parking spots do you think we need? And we're answering these questions. But it's partly because when Mother's Day, the whole horse trailer parking lot, which is no longer labeled horse trailer parking lot on their website, used to be, it was totally filled with cars. Parked, you know, like a grocery store parking lot, you know, maximizing how many cars you could get in. And I parked on the corner by the gravel pile, and the horse hated me, but he put up with it. He said it hurt my feet. Don't make me do this. But I got in there, I could ride. And
shoes on.
No, he doesn't. That's the deal. He doesn't have shoes on. So at any rate, they too are dealing with their limiting thing, which is they have so much water use traffic in the summer. They can't expand their existing car parking lot right above the horse parking lot. So they've let people drift down into the other one. So
that's the second spot. We have long-term development opportunities at Whipple Creek, but I think sort of in the near term, I think we can make a modest investment in that. That current facility and make a vast improvement with some long range planning for future development. so.
Well, make it as major mild as you can.
Yeah.
It is the limiting thing, and it's the angst, like I've said a lot. It's what causes the angst.
Yeah.
And a friend I ran across at Battle Ground Lake, she says, you dare to go to Whipple Creek? I said, oh, yeah. She said, haven't they been mean to you? I says, well, if I'm not mean to them, they're not mean to me.
Yeah. Good so, case.
It's angst causing.
Yeah. And then just real quickly on that, the acquisition part of the capital plan, this is both conservation features, acquisitions, which Danielle focuses on, and then new park properties with Rocky and Danielle put on using the conservation features money, park improvement program money. That $20 million includes the 24 acquisition money at $6,800,000 and change.
Yeah, we're focusing to spin down the balance reserve on legacy lands. We have a new reserve policy getting approved, which requires to put the half of $1.2 million.
It's just a little over $1 million.
$1.2 million in reserve. And then it's, you know, we get bring in about $2 million a year in conservation futures. And then with our PIF funds, we have flexibility, you know, we have the old funds we're trying to expend. Just because no matter what year it's shown, we're just trying to get it in the plan. And as soon as something comes through it, trying to be like Jim and snag it real quick.
So I just put a sort of placeholder out there in 2030, $2 million. We'll have a little conversation about it before we go out for sort of first feedback on the capital plan. And that's all I had.
And we'll be coming to you guys in next month, a month after, with a draft plan. We'll have a public meeting. We have to go to
the planning
commission now, so that's another stop that we will be having before adoption in October, November. So, and then next year, we're planning to get it 30 days sooner for our draft plan as well. So, I'm going to run through this real quick. Interrupt me anytime you need. And I'll alert Sherry. Good, Sherry's pictures on there. So she will. Her staff has done a great job in assisting us in assessing our funding situation and looking ahead and kind of coming up with our initial. Right now, we're going to be just setting the stage for future discussion with you and with council in regards to this. We're going to talk about our funding background, quick high level overview. Start talking about our 6-year forecast. I'll start to become Chicken Little and talk about the sky falling. And then we'll talk about our two types of level of service. And those are real key important to us as we talk about future steps. And then just give you a very high level of sort of our current financial resources. When we come back, we'll talk about next steps. So wrong way. So in the background, and I wish I could show you a picture of what it looks like today. I just have a staff one. It has a lot more color on there, which is reflective of our maintenance needs. Yes. So just a real high level. We have two park systems, as you know. We have our general fund system, or sometimes called regional parks. It also includes Heritage Farm. We're also the county's landscaper for all. Did I spell landscaper right?
Yeah.
I did. Whew. When I looked at it, it looked wrong. But so all of our downtown campus facilities around buildings, stuff like we do that work. And that's funded primarily through general fund. We also are able to use REIT II funding for major maintenance or development of those assets. We have the Greater Clark Park District, which is MPD district, a metropolitan park district, which is includes the unincorporated urban growth area for the city of Vancouver. We have the levy, which is currently at about 13.5 cents per 1,000 is the millage rate. We have park improvement fees. So as you develop new houses and buildings inside the district, we get those fees, and we're eligible to use REIT II funding. So Whipple Creek is a classic example of a regional park, and LaLonde Neighborhood Park here at the grand opening is a classic example of GCPD assets. And really through this whole process, and these are questions that you'll provide feedback on, but really we'll be asking council these two questions. First, the statement. We do not have sufficient resources to maintain existing parks to industry standard levels. So the decision needed is, do we continue to decrease our maintenance level, or do we increase the resources to meet the current parks needs? So that's that critical thing. Are we going to find more resources, or are we going to lower our level of service? And we're not meeting the service level for GCPD for recreational demand or sites. So this one's dependent upon the first decision, but did we stop developing new parks and acquiring property and reduce our level of service? I have fewer acres per 1,000 residents. Or do we increase those resources to meet our continued growth and recreational demand? And if we can't maintain those new assets, we shouldn't be building. And so that's sort of the crux of the question we're trying to get answered. That was quick. So this is a review for the last 10 years. Green is money, red is expenses. As you can see, in most years, our expenses have exceeded our revenue or income. And that's typically because we're able to handle that because we have a reserve. We're spending down our reserve. And the reserves based off of in prior years, we didn't spend all the money. Any money we don't save stays in that levy account. You can notice that here in 23, you see a big increase. And so that's alarming for us. When we break this apart, yeah.
In 14 and 18. What happened in those?
In 14 and 18? Yeah. You know, because
I'm looking,
I mean, it's conceivable. 18, for instance, the income. So I assume in 14 we were still in the reduced. So I think in 08, 09, we had a RIF. So we had layoffs and we
recession.
Recession. And so we went down significantly. And I believe around 2015 and
2014 is also when we temporarily stopped collecting. We stopped charging fees for parking permits and for shelter reservations.
Thank you.
And I think that's also around the time when we decided that the city and the county were not going to be a combined parks district together.
2015 is that year.
Those were the big decisions.
The only reason I was asking that is if there was anything on the line, subsequent years, but it's just that if what he's saying is that.
And I don't know, and I don't think Sherry has the historical data memorized either, but I'm not sure exactly how our expenditures to the city reflect in regards to this budget as well. So we had $1.5 million or more of money that was going to the city for administration that, and I know we had a savings of that, so it must be more than $1.5 million because we added some staff in 2015 to take on some of that admin. But there was a lot of the planning staff specifically that we didn't have when we did that.
Well, you put this against the backdrop of the county population.
It's going up 1.4% per year. Yeah. And I think 20 and 21 are dipped down because of course COVID.
Yeah. And so those are outliers.
And if we look at it in regards to revenues, the red line here, existing park maintenance is the darker green. You can see where, again, COVID occurs. As we're coming out of COVID, we're starting to get back to where we're expending more than we have in 23. And then that light green is We're anticipating those new parks in the capital plan that we're developing over the next 6 years. That is that additional FTE that we need to be that additional level. So you can start to see that the alignment is getting farther and farther apart. And it's even more impactful on general fund. So if you look at general fund, so what we require is in 19, 20, 21, and 22 here is they do, we call it a look back, but essentially at the end of the year, we have to, we can't have one fund benefit another. So if we're expending more general fund, or we look at the averages, we need to get more general fund. And what happened in 23 is finance look back in 20, 21, and 22, asked for an increase. And so it was like 100,000 one year, almost nothing the next, and then it went to like 300,000 in 22. So as you've seen that rise in revenues, because it has to match. What you see in 23 is we had a large increase in expenditures that we have not gone yet to ask for that increase. And that's very troubling. My job is to keep it at the red line. And you can see that we haven't been doing that. And if you look at that trend, if we were for 24, continue to spend as we did in 23, and our revenues are staying stagnant based off of what our current allocation is in general fund, we start to have some real concerns. And so now's the time. And we started this conversation last year with our fee program. We went to council in January and made a proposal for increasing fees on some sites doing that, and part of that was, hey, let's look at the bigger picture, Rocky, and that's what we're so looking at in a Greater Clark Park District and regional parks is, what are our five biggest expenditures for parks that cost us the most money? You can see here, you know, Salmon Creek Klein Line is our biggest one in Greater Clark Park, Hawkinson Meadows, and then Luke Jensen and Flida and Pacific Park. If you look at regional parks, Louisville, then you're going to Frenchman's, Vancouver Lake, Lacamas. And Camp Curry is an outlier here is because this is including our capital funding, and we did some structural assessments at Camp Curry. And so next year it won't show up here because it was sort of a 1 year thing, but each one of these things, you know, it all adds up. So what we're doing right now is for 24, we used to have a gate agreement with a private contractor would open and close some of our restrooms and our gates. We've canceled that. And what we're doing is we're piloting to determine the reason why we closed the gate was vandalism. We had one or two very small cases that staff brought up, but the anecdotally what that those were sort of those causes. And so what I've identified so far is that the type of vandalism we're getting right now in our parks isn't car dependent, i.e. the gate doesn't have to be open. If people are walking in at Pacific Park, for example, we have a lot of tagging, a lot of vandalism, people are just walking in. And so we're watching to see what our vandalism changes based off of that gate agreement. We're also looking at time locks for our restrooms, so they would close with a magnet at a certain time. You still punch the panic button and get out, but that allows us to lock them up to again reduce the damage inside the buildings. We're looking at an irrigation reduction within the Greater Clark Park District. What that will do is reduce our mowing that we need to do. Our water bill will be less. Aesthetically, it won't be as pleasing, and grass is not going to look as good, but we're allowed those savings that we have there are savings that we can put towards primary safety. We're really focused on trying to make sure that we're meeting the safety requirements, whether that's clean restrooms or our playgrounds or limit up trees so we don't have other damages. And what we've been focused on is making sure sometimes you call it lipstick on a pig. Make sure it looks really good when you come in. The grass, the landscaping looks really, really good. The restrooms are in pretty good shape. But there's a lot of other work that we're deferring, and we need to start doing that because of the age of our system, especially in GCPD. We're starting to ride that new park to middle-aged park, and we're starting to see the neglect, you know, and if it was a human, we're starting to see that our battery is running low. And that's what you look like when you start to get middle-aged. And we're looking at, we had a large increase in seasonal costs last year. Part of that was our rates, as well as we had some retirements and other vacancies that increased. So we're reducing a 200. If we don't have any changes to our resources over the next 5 or 6 years, we'll need to start looking at our capital plan and start thinking about delaying or not including new development in there, new assets to maintain. And we'll continue looking at that, those charts from before, at reductions in our maintenance and operation. So now it's slow. But really, this, you know, what is the impact of parks on the community? And, you know, what is it beyond just dollars and cents? When we think about community engagement impacts, really parks become an identity, or the identity of a neighborhood, a community. You know, when people talk about Lackamas or Louisville, there's a feeling that that's our asset. When you think about Hoxton Community Park or Philadelphia Community Park, there are community members that really creates a community identity. I moved to this neighborhood because Philadelphia is there, or Bosco Farms, or I forgot the F Park. I can't remember the name of it. It's out off on 99th and Salmon Creek area, where they're always calling me because non-neighbors are using their park. Fazio, thank you, Fazio. So that's my neighborhood park. It's for my neighborhood, and so there's that ownership. So really, that becomes that identity. Parks are really the new front porch for a lot of communities. Family reunions, birthday parties, play dates, organized sports, all these things that bring the community together and allow us to socialize and be human, get away from our screens. And really, this gets out and connect us with the community. Trails, off-leash areas, community gardens, you know, again, it's that.
There are no front porches in apartment buildings. Yeah. And we have more and more of those, so we need.
You know, it's this time of year when I drive home, there's a guy in the corner just three houses down from me. He's always got his garage door open and his lawn chair out there, and he's front porch. You know, he doesn't have a front porch, but most of us don't do that anymore. Where, you know, you think back, you know, probably you're talking about the 60s or whatever, you know, people were going through the neighborhood, there was that big front porch, there was a, oh, hey, Teresa, how you doing? How are the kids? There was that. Now our parks are that space for us to do that now. There's an economic impact. So I didn't make these numbers up. These came from an economic analysis of outdoor recreation in Washington State. In Clark County, there's about $1 billion in total expenditures and almost $1.4 billion in economic contributions, creating more than 7,500 jobs. And this says 71,000 in local tax. I want to say it's more than that because it should be, you know, 8.5% of whatever the economic contributions are. But it creates 6% of all jobs in Washington. It creates jobs and home values. So most 6 out of 7 people, 86%, say they want to live next to high quality parks, those amenities, and that's why I want to live in this area. Closer you are to those sort of natural areas and parks, the higher your value is. When we bought Cedars, I paid extra money to be back to a golf course. You know, that was, we heard that over and over. And so that privacy, that those things are reasons why values, we pay more for things. And that's my will not working. What'd I do? Thank you, sir. And livability, to promote wellness, there's a direct correlation that the farther you away are from a park or trail, the higher your BMI is. There's improved physical, you know, there are prescriptions for trails. Gosh, back in 2008, 2009, there was a book that people were giving out through, what's that big health company that's, so, you know, the other one, Kaiser. Kaiser created this book they mimicked in Portland where if you came in looking like me, your doctor would give you this, and I have a high BMI, so that's why I'm saying that. They would give you this book and prescribe you to go out and walk. And here's all these close home trail opportunities. And so stress is reduced when you're out in the natural area. Promotes empathy by learning about the stories, history, experience of many people, so that interpretation, that education. And I think it inspires curiosity and lifelong learning. So why is there this structure far edge of the regional environment? Like, why is that there? And what did it do? What is the gazebo? This resiliency. So in an urban environment like we are, this improves air quality. These green infrastructure are heat islands that are cooler, significantly cooler than our pavement. And it makes us more resilient to natural resources by having these issues. So beyond just the recreational values, they do stuff. And first, we're going to talk about level of service for recreational demand, and we're getting close to our time. So do we need to vote to extend our meeting? All right. So we talked about this earlier. Level of service to meet recreational demand within the Greater Clark Park District, it's 6 acres per thousand. That's broken down to 3 acres for community, 2 for neighborhood, and 1 for urban natural areas. In our regional parks, it's 10 acres per thousand residents. And that's a combination of natural areas and developed parks. And it's a good thing we're including natural areas in here because otherwise we would be deficient. So this is a breakdown by PIF district, population in each one, and that sort of orangey square, I'm trying to just highlight that that's the GCPD level of service, and it is distinct and different from the county at the bottom. So as you can see here, the level of service means how many acres we're supposed to have based off our current population, and then how that's broken out by type. Down below, our level of service total shows that, you know, we need 6,347 total acres between both regional and Greater Clark Park districts. We have 7,100 acres, so we're exceeding by 800 acres, but that's primarily because of regional parks. Within the GCPD, we're getting a solid A minus, 94 is an A minus now, right? We'll call it an A in regards to community parks, but we're getting low C's in neighborhood and natural areas. We have 130 acres that we need to acquire. So overall, we're in the green when we factor in, but as the population continues to grow at 1.4%, our acreage requirements continue to rise. And in 20 years, we will not have enough acres for regional parks if we don't acquire any additional. And to meet our level of service from a financial, so above you'll see assumed or estimated cost to acquire land based off the type and to develop those costs per acre based off of the type. And this is based off of our current acquisition numbers and our current development estimates. And we have 17 parks in the GCPD we need to develop. If we utilize this model, it's roughly $79 million we would need just to develop those. If we were going to acquire the 178 acres, we need another $48 million to meet that level of service currently within the Greater Clark Park District. And then to develop those assets, we need 127. So to meet our level of service today in the Greater Clark Park District, we need $255 million. And in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years, at our current rates, we're going to continue to fall short. Now, if we have them, we have to maintain them. And so maintenance requirements is the next critical thing to look at. Oops. Serenity. Sorry. It's a little delayed even on this computer now. It must be the battery is slow charging like me. So plan tasks. So plan tasks is what we are planning to do out there. So that's light maintenance, landscape maintenance, mowing, and trail maintenance. So those things that we're planning to do throughout the year, and we're doing it. But we have unplanned tasks that occur in a good operating system. 70 to 80% of the tasks that your staff are doing should be planned, and that 20 or 30% should be unplanned. And that's, vandalism, hazard trees, the storm damage, any kind of repairs, and community requests. And we get a lot of community requests because of our interface between our natural undeveloped properties, specifically flood hazard trees. When we look at the red line is from 2009 till today, the number of GCPD parks that we have developed. The orange line is our general fund or our regional parks. And then you look at our staffing. So for parks O&M, the green line there is we started out about 20. We went up to about 26. We went down a couple staff and then we went back up and we're about 20, 29 right now. In regards to our administration, you'll see 09 to 14, we're like one, two. And then in 15, we divorced from the city and we took on that administrative. So we had additional administrative admin, office assistants, my position. And then we added a planner. We added David's team, and then in 23 we added an additional 3 FTE for planners and capital projects, and so we're still at a under 10 FTE and about almost 30 for that. But our, as you see, the flat line for operation and maintenance staff versus our red line, so we have not been keeping pace. We've developed 11 parks since we've added any staff. And the bump right at the end are two project positions. So we got those last year, but those aren't permanent, it's only for 2 years. We did an MMP, so MMP is a maintenance management plan. So it looks at all of our assets and based off of an industry standard, identify what we need to do for maintenance, just for our planned, primarily your planned maintenance tasks. And we need 122,000, almost 123,000 hours. This is how it's broken down based off of how our teams are set up right now. And if we calculate that into people positions, we need 59 positions. We have 29. So we're roughly at 50% FTE update to meet our maintenance. So that means of every two tasks that we have to do, we're not going to get one accomplished. And that's reflective in our first quarter with Cardiograph, we're seeing a very high, very significant closure rate on tasks, and that's because we don't have enough people. And it's hard for staff to let things just cancel, but it's starting to give us the data of where this gap is. If we're only looking at the 50,000 hours roughly that we have in staff time, we're always using 150 hours. We're always at 100%. We're perfect, but the reality is we have a lot of things out there.
That, stuff is a lot.
Yeah, it just means that we're not doing things, and we're now working to systematically do things. Yeah, knock on wood, equally
maintain things and catch holes that are not progressing.
And our maintenance requirements aren't flat, so it's not the same number of hours every year. So you can look at here, is it based off of the month, it's anywhere from 26 FTE to 88 FTE based off the month. And a lot of this is mowing. Our light maintenance goes up because people are in our property. We have leaf blowing. So depending upon the season is the difference. And how we accomplish that right now is we hire seasonals. We use correction crews, volunteers to try to fill some of that gap so that we don't have 80 FTE year round. The thing we are looking at is some of these high months, are there things that we could do in these other months, again, to balance out that workload so we're getting more accomplished, and that takes time. So this is total, but when we look at it based off of our program, so think of district parks is our GCPD, so the green line. The purple line is total. Our yellowish green is our regional parks, and then our special property, which is Heritage Farm, Camp Bonneville, and our campus assets. And then blank is our, I can't remember if that's just admin. I think, Sherry, that was admin, right?
Recreation program staff.
Oh, yes, that's recreation program staff for doing special permits, reservations, parking fees. Thank you for that. So again, you can see programmatically, you know, it's not all even, but for the most part, there's a trend. And typically we think of 65% of our budget is going to park district or GCPD parks and 35% to regional parks. But it doesn't always equate out, as you can see here, it's not always a 65-35 split. So worth that time, we're just setting a framework to get us to the next session, because we got a lot of data to go over to talk about what are some potential solutions. And so, as you guys know, we have these five general funding sources we use. We use general fund, which is the most flexible fund and most overcommitted fund in the county. We have our levy, which is we get that tax every year, but it's restricted to a certain area only and for certain uses. We have a park fee program, so that's if you don't use it, you don't pay it. The fairest form of taxation, one might say, and that's where parking fees, reservation fees, special use fees, park improvement fees. So that's only developing new assets within the Greater Clark Park District. And REIT 2, which is able to be used for major maintenance, is primarily where we use it, but it's also we can develop, use it to develop new assets. We cannot acquire property with REIT 2, but we can with PIF, we could with general fund, and technically we could do that with GCPD assets. And park fee programs are exclusively used to offset our operational maintenance costs. There could be another bubble over here, and that's one of those things, is there's always another levy, another fee program or something like that could be considered. But right now, this is our deck of cards that we use. And I've used different colors to reflect, and the government we're always calling it color money. And we can only do certain things with different colors of money. So our next steps is to present something very similar to this to council next month. We'll be coming back here to start talking about a resource analysis and potentially some staff recommendations. It may be two stops here. We may have to break that into two stops. And each time we come to you, we're gonna be going to council next to finally determine what council's decisions are. Are we living within our means because of the reality of our finances? Are we looking to increase those resources? And each of those have, if we're looking to increase our resources, we have to increase our resources to meet our minimum level of service today and consider the expansion to meet our level of service for recreational demand. So those are going to be three tough decisions and all kinds of variation to that. But as Yoda says, do or do not, there is no try. So we have to make a decision. Council has to make a decision to help us direct. If there is no decision, that is a decision, which is we have to live within our current budget constraints, which means we will have to look at reducing the things that we're doing to stay within our means. And how we do that is very, we have a lot of options, and none of them are fun for anything, you know. With that, Sherry, is there anything else you would like to add to the Parks Advisory Board on this?
Well, I
Just a quick introduction. Hi, everyone. Sherry Villafane, Public Works Finance Manager. I apologize for not attending these. So I look forward to being present more frequently. We still are diving into the numbers to help Rocky identify better metrics. And, you know, if we are going to reduce expenses, what are those reasonable expenses? And yeah, we're going to support the parks team as much as we can. Great presentation, Rocky. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. And the computer is slow. I hit the unshare.
Oh, there she is.
All right. So, well, good. Do you guys have any questions, or did I just give you like a really big dinner and you just got to process and digest?
Well, for me, there's no question to be had. The reality is great. What I look forward for, I mean, I was just waiting to just get done with this, it's alternatives, solutions. That's where Sharon and I are going to get along. That's my background. I got in finance. Get along with that.
Yeah, and
think about alternatives. We just need to be bold enough to take it. Let me make this observation. I hope council doesn't say name this, because the reputation and what makes many people want to come here is our green space. We cannot forget that. People don't move here because this looks like Hollywood. It's not. You know. So we need to live within who we are and invest on that.
And within the Greater Clark Park District, we've got right now the forecast looks like 6 years at our current spending rate, 8 years, 9 years or so. With the general fund, it's every year we've got to figure that out because the trends are going. And every year that we wait, it just
catch up.
The gap gets bigger and bigger. And so it's going to be tough. So, yeah. So yeah, when we come back in a month, we'll have more data on some alternatives, we'll probably come up with sort of, you know, the three alternatives I'm talking about that stay within our current budget. So, you know, if it was at my home, I wouldn't be getting ice cream anymore. And, you know, I wouldn't get steak, I might start getting hamburger. And, you know, do I really need Netflix? You know, we start whittling away those non-essential things to a point to where, you know, I'm eating rice and beans and I'm taking the bus, you know, in regards to budget wise. We'll look at what would it take to just kind of get up to our current level service of maintenance. And then what is it really that we've communicated through our PROS plan, through the adoption of GCPD in regards to what that standard is and how do we get to that level. And somewhere, hopefully in the middle there is where we'll get over here on this side of one of those. Over time,
I think you need to look for ways to maximize your income, more parking fees, adjust your PIFs to match your urban growth boundaries, and the urban growth boundaries keep getting tweaked. And you have to, in my opinion, have a way to match that regularly.
Yeah, and can I, you know, with Sherry's team's help, you know, I think we've got some wild ideas that we're trying to make sure that they're not too out in moon and stars as some of those alternatives. And now, however it is, we need to make sure that our message is, you understand it, council understands it, and the general public understands in regards to the impacts on whichever decision is made.
Yeah, you start charging fees. Interesting comparison is the refuge. They're not allowed by their regional or headquarters office to increase their parking or their entrance fee, which is $3. I'm the one that opens the envelopes. There are more $5 contribution than $3, but they're not allowed to officially ask for it, but they get that money anyway. Maybe, you know, if you start adding up a way to efficiently process parking and add parking fees to a few places, people are willing to pay just to get out there.
No,
that's just a little tweak that if you make some of that stuff less bureaucratic to change as you need.
Yeah, and in our fee program recommendation that we presented in January, right now we have $2 to $8 is our parking. 97% of our parking fees or passenger vehicles, which are at $3. And so we're looking to go to a flat rate of $5. It helps our seasonal staff because now there's just one number they have to remember. And 97% of our current parking fees would be paying $2 more. Or is that roughly 40% more? So again, there would be a...
And on the revenues, most of them are paying it anyway.
Yeah. And I had that... Yeah. When I was in Oregon and we had a $3 parking fee, we got a lot of $5 bills and $10 bills because we didn't have change. So people just, it's whatever they had. And so yeah. Someone come up to me, hey, can you break this? Sorry, I don't have any cash. You can't allow me. And so that was one way. Or we say, well, you know, if you just add another $10 or $15, you get an annual pass. And it's so that then it's a peace of mind. You don't have to worry about counting change.
Well, I see. I think we need to approach the stories that we're going to tell them as we try to miss people. You know, that we need this money. And one story goes to Sherry, and that is in finance, if you don't invest on a commodity or an asset, you risk the future. That's a story that Sherry can tell from finance background, you know, from a fierce point of view. But for us, we need to tell that story. We are looking at all these assets here, what the other areas. They may not understand the finance side of it, but they can understand the environment. So I think we need to tell a lot of stories that we are selling this to you, because I'm telling you, if we don't invest on this, we're going to end up like Arizona.
You know, and I think that's where the Sherry's team, and I look to you guys as well, is David and I are sometimes so close to the problem. We know it so well that we can't talk English. You know, we can't put it in terms of the impact because we're sometimes too close to it. And so that's the thing we're really trying to focus on, is making sure that we're focusing on the impacts of the community in regards to the decisions get made. Not so much that we need an extra $8 million or $20 million a year or 30 FTE, but what are those impacts in the community if based off the decision?
We tell good stories, I think people buy into it. I'm not concerned about that.
Well, there's always the people who will complain, but if you, as you said, tell the story of why we want to keep giving you good parks, but
sometimes
the money doesn't run trees.
The debt that they're running, they say we want money. Okay, everybody wants money. But what's the story behind you wanting money? If you can tell that story from the financial background, we share, we can do that, then people can buy into that. It's like life is, I remember living better around many years ago, lived in the past, because they said we want more money. Okay, tell us a story as to why you want this money. So when we help them come with a story, explain the reason. People approve life and we build all those walls.
It's almost like you should lead with the impact of park slides. You know, because that's the why, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Why should we invest in parks? Why should we invest in open space conservation?
Why did you come here? What attracted you? Yeah. You know, yeah. So the opposite of that is what?
I'll tell you that this is every park district I've ever worked in or worked for, this is a common problem. Just like Portland Parks and Rec has, they have $93 million in capital money that they won't spend because they can't build stuff that they can't maintain. And so people complain all the time about them sitting on a big chunk of money, but they just can't build anything else because they can't maintain. So we're in somewhat the same position. We've got a really healthy capital pot of money, the RE2 and the PIF dollars. It's just, at what point are you just putting things out there that you can't do right by?
Yeah, but look at the parks in Portland.
Yeah.
You know, they're private, they're not maintained, and people hate it.
Yeah.
So I think we need to be careful about this notion. We don't want to pay for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you don't invest, you set yourself fairly. So I think we have an opportunity now to make bold decisions, not for popularity contest, but for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's yep. a challenge that comes to us. It's not about being elected or being popular. It's about doing the right thing for the future.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about this. You know. I really am.
Well,
We'll come back next month. We'll start talking about some of those options and, you know, levy lid lifts and other things that we'll be talking about. And I look forward to this conversation and the input, because it will be valuable for us moving forward to council and getting great questions from them and hopefully making the decisions that are supportive of your recommendations.
Could you bring the list of those?
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the story too. You've got $9 million in PIP, whatever number it is. And you won't be able to service it if you build it.
And we'll lose it
yeah.
in 10 years. Yeah. We don't spend it in 10 years, we lose it.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, it's, you know, we have a, right now it's roughly a $75, $78 million 6-year capital program. But 20, 30, 40 of that should we be expending if we can't maintain it? Even if it's a capital stewardship project, if we're adding something new to an existing park.
The only thing we're saving if we do that, if we shift from sort of a capital program that's focused on a balance between, because of last year's capital plan was about a dollar for dollar balance between stewardship capital, so investing in what we have and building new. If we've shifted to a focus of just stewardship capital, the only thing that we're really reducing there is drive time, which is a big expense to travel from place to place, loading up equipment and loading equipment. But it doesn't eliminate the O&M requirement. If you put in a new softball, soccer field facility, Pacific Park for that specific item. So. There are things that we can do. Rocky and I talked about sort of bulletproofing some things, like, you know, spending more money on a better quality bench. So we're not, you know, maybe we're powder coating aluminum benches and we're not buying wood benches. They're more expensive up front, but we don't touch them for, you know, 25 years versus 12 or 8 some locations where the bench is just rocked.
Well, so, appreciate you guys' extra time tonight. And we will, this isn't the first or the last time we'll talk about it. And I think Jim just made a motion to adjourn.
Yep.
I'll say this was so far the most exciting for me, this last part.
We want you to be excited about it.
I love this stuff. Jim, best friends.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, everyone.
Great night.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David. No problem.